Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl, just you and me.
Break it up with Linda Mitchell.
Ah, you said it, girl.
Sharon
Kerr.
Yeah.
Through the land, we educate, communicate, and collaborate.
We give, showing others how to live.
We care, we love all through the land.
Well, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you're listening in from, to our listeners in Canada, South Korea, United Kingdom, Japan, and many, many more out there, welcome in to Waking Up with Linda McShane. This is our cross-country connection here, and we have an exciting show with great information for you today. You know, it is natural for human beings to look forward. Our eyes naturally look ahead. In this sense, we are made for moving toward a goal. And in order to reach those goals, we have to have mentors. And that quote was from my mentor, Dasakuri Keita. And we also have to have life coaches. Because life coaches listen, they share honestly, and they direct you with suggestions. And if you listen, you will meet all goals. So today we have Professor Karen Bird, life coach, coming on with us today, and it's going to be exciting. But before we get going, just listen to this and keep this in mind, and you will always reach your goals.
Listen, baby, ain't no mountain high, ain't no valley low, ain't no river wide.
Don't worry, baby.
Just call my name. I'll be there in a hurry.
That's right. We have to keep those goals up and have that type of attitude. So this is our cross-country connect. And ain't no mountain high enough or wide enough to keep me from getting to my professor, Karen Bird, life coach, the best in the world. Her title today is Showing Up. You know, showing up solidifies our goals. And we must show up to meet our goals and meet everything else. As I said earlier, life coach listens, shares with honesty, and direct with suggestion. And if you listen, you will meet all of your goals. And it is important to have an excellent mentor and an excellent life coach. She is the best in the country, Karen Bird, life coach, Professor Karen Bird. Welcome in to Waking Up with Linda Maxson. How are you today?
Oh, I love it. I love your energy. Thank you, Linda. Your that buildup was way, way too generous. But I do appreciate it. I do appreciate it. But I'm so glad to be back. And I asked you just really in short turnaround this week if we could get together, because when we last got together, it was about a month ago or a little over a month ago, I guess. And I want to just refresh where we came from and why I want to revisit this so close on the heels of that other discussion. So here we are 4 weeks later, and what we talked about last time, Miss Linda actually ended up coaching me through a good portion of our time together, and we extended the session even past an hour because she literally gave me some coaching, and what I was sharing that last session was about valuing my time, but that was because I was in a relationship, and I had felt like it had gone as far as it could under the current sort of dynamics and agreements. And when I confronted the boyfriend at the time about the change that was needed, what ended up happening was actually sort of a mutual agreement to just take a break, and not really knowing what that would mean, but him working on him, me working on me. But it really hurts when you love somebody and you're used to being close to them and feeling so much a part of the fabric of one another's lives, and, you know, talking every day. And we went from that, talking every day and seeing each other fairly frequently, to, like, no contact. And then the no contact became a tiny bit, a little bit more. We started talking again. I think I've seen him in person once in maybe 90 days, which is a lot for me. And that's a long time to go without seeing somebody I really love and value as a human being. So, but for good reasons, we had to do this thing. But I was sharing my pain with you that day, still a little fresh, because we were talking about when you face the fear of loss of something, especially relationships, and feeling those feelings and going through them and living through them, it's the hardest thing to do, but it's so necessary. And that is because, and this is where we left it, and this is, gosh, very raw, obviously, because I'm using my own experience, like we talked about, to try to help other people too. But we talked about how great it would be at the end of the session to allow others to help you grow. And when you're a helper type person, to stop pouring yourself out, but let others begin to respect and admire you and pour into you, which means you got to stop trying to fix them. And you've also got to realize that with your time and your gifts, you should focus on yourself more. So that's why we ended up concluding in that last session that you need to do what brings you joy. And even when it hurts you to not be with someone that you love, but not, and you don't really think you're trying to fix them, but because your personality is that type, especially in I was talking about the difference between my girlfriend relationships and the gender differences, is that it's hard sometimes for a man and a woman to agree that less time and less talking actually helps. And that's something that this boyfriend had been telling me since we've been together. And I've been like, no, we need to talk about this. So we have both backed off and both working on our separate things. And you and I also talked about what it feels like when you're the kind of person that's constantly setting goals, and your goals and your helping people and all the things that you're doing because you're a helper type means that you are taking risks. And a lot of people don't take the same kind of risk to stretch outside of their comfort zones, to really feel those feelings, to fly into the air, or the sense of flying, or I used to call it the trapeze, like swinging out into the abyss and perhaps not having a good security system or a net underneath you, or as in the case of flying, you might hit some turbulent air or something. And these things are difficult. They're hard. And a lot of people stay on the platform. And I always thought the people staying on the platform, the people staying down on the runway were just people that were afraid of risk or that weren't willing to grow. But I think what I'm learning through this own experience is that sometimes staying on the platform means you have to be forced to address your own problems, your own issues. And that taking stock and taking care of yourself are a continuous process that you have to keep in front of you and keep as a focus in your life, because even as you look at your friends, or in my case, I'm coaching other people or looking at my clients, you're also looking at yourself. And so the topic today is really, what do you need to do to show up for yourself? How do you show up in your own life? And you can continue, and you may always be motivated to keep helping others and open them up and help them see themselves better, because that's what we do as human beings, one to another. We put up the mirror, and if someone trusts you and lets you in, they'll let you gently show them what you see, right? Well, you have to be willing to take that mirror back from them too. And this is a two-sided relationship. Linda, you and I talked about this last time too. We talked about how you and I both love to build relationships, and we love to keep them. We like to keep our friends close over a long time and share our gifts and keep the peace as much as possible. But when needed, confront the things that make it hard for us to be together or get closer or that sort of thing. You do the same thing for your friends and family that you do for your lover or your spouse or your partner. But I know I sound like I'm rambling, but this is going to come to a point in a minute, is that you also said in our last session, when your own priority is you, what you realize is that, and this is your mantra, Linda, that you shared with the listeners, is that when you change, it will change. And what Linda was saying at the time, for everybody who may want to go back and listen to that one, it's on my podcast page on KarenBird.com, and Linda has it on her blog talk as well. But I think it was September 24th. I'm not quite sure how you would find it on Linda's podcast list. But anyway, in that session, we were talking about how when you work, we had concluded that when it may hurt to be forced to off because your loved one is setting a healthy boundary. Honestly, they're doing you a favor, because if that person is stepping back to work on themselves because they want to grow and they need space to get their head right or whatever they need to do, you need to let them take that space. And that loved one, if they truly love you, is showing you that even though it hurts for you not to get to be with them right now, the most important thing is that you honor that space apart and stay consistent in your love for one another. And even if you don't know what the outcome is going to be, you could be risking losing that person forever, or you could be actually just risking the time it takes to heal and grow so that you can be together and ultimately make, like, you know, I've talked about, like, make that relationship last to the end. Because what I've brought to the podcast in the past, just a refresher, is that I've been talking about how I've gone through these chapters in my life, that the first third of my life was growing up in Arkansas, and the second chapter of my life, the next 30 years, was marriage and children and a career in marketing communications and teaching and higher ed administration in Southern California. And that this last chapter, chapter three or act three in my life, is back in Arkansas as my mom is aging and is a widow, and we're circling around her to help her with the things that she needs in this part of the country. And that required me to leave California, leave my children in California and my ex-husband, but to start over in Arkansas. And I shared with our listeners over the past year or so what it's been like for me to learn new paths and make new friends and completely start my life over, learn a whole new industry in Arkansas, what that change requires. And then I've also been sharing the parts of my relationships, both new friends and old friends, and keeping those connections through the pandemic and this change in my life, and then also what this relationship, this personal relationship with the boyfriend has meant to me at this stage of my life, because he and his family have been a catalyst for my own transition and have, you know, loved me and supported me through, you know, really the past 2.5 years of a pretty dramatic change for me. So anyway, back to the point, how do you step back from the relationships and the people whose gifts you treasure, even when it hurts, to how do you step back from those? Now, I'm not talking about the toxic relationships. I'm talking about the good ones, the ones that make you happy. How do you sometimes step back from wanting more of that person's time or whatever and just step back and show up for yourself? So I've got a couple of points to make, and we talked about my famous list, but I think I want to start there, even though it's kind of early in the show, and interrupt me at any time, of course, Linda, but here's where I'm going with the show up thing, is that number one, no matter how it may hurt to really focus on yourself, you need to get clear with your priorities and also to understand your you-ness. You and I have talked about the value of you and your unique gifts. And in the last episode or last session, we also talked about how you need to really treasure your gifts and the asset that you bring and only really share it with people who can appreciate it. So, in other words, you get depleted if you pour your gifts out and they're not appreciated. Not that you need someone to reciprocate completely or 100% give you all their gifts at that moment, but that other people taking a lot and taking all the time can leave you feeling depleted. So you also have to pour back into yourself. Don't give away too much, and you also have to pour into yourself. So how do you do that? You get clear with your priorities. You understand your own value and the gifts that you bring. Number two, commit to your passions. Okay, so what is committing to your passions look like? So in this time when you're returning to yourself and you're really kind of focusing on your own needs and you know, being clear about your value and adjusting to staying on your own path more, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And this is, Linda and I have talked, and the listeners have probably heard us talk about this, about the importance of journaling or looking back sometimes at the words you wrote or looking back at your life. And of course I save my pictures and adventures on my Facebook, and I keep my personal and spiritually intimate stuff in my journal. And then I also blog on the KarenBerg.com site and co-produce with Linda this podcast, which helps me note my own growth and my own discussions and my own thoughts as I'm having them and growing. So over this past year and a half, I've gone back and looked at my journal and listened to some of the podcasts again and reflected on my own life and said, well, where am I now? And what does returning to me look like a year and a half after I bought this house and 2 years after I moved back to Arkansas after living in California for 30 years? And now actually 2 years this coming week, it'll be 2 years I've had this new job and this new career. So it's, for me, it's super fun to look at where I am now and say, where am I? So one of the things in committing to my passions is that I've, through my job, I've been allowed to write. And in the last 30 days, I got a published byline in a state magazine for educators, administrators in Arkansas. That also means speaking. And so within the last 30 and 60 days, really, I've been going out giving presentations and sharing this new content area and the knowledge that I've gained over the past two years in this new job in our industry and my specialty area in this industry. So I've sort of come into my own in my new career, and I've had a lot of successes. I also co-wrote the course that is being taken by all the educators in the state of Arkansas for their licensure now, and that is on the subject matter that my group specializes in. And so it's been a banner year for us, and this topic is family and community engagement, which is close to my heart in public schools in Arkansas. But, you know, what it means to be inclusive and what it means to support the whole family and the whole child. I, you know, it's big, huge topic would be to talk about the passion I have for my job and the work that we do. But the point I'm making in my list, as I'm the first item on the list, is, you know, we're talking about showing up for yourself. Let me go back a little bit. How do you show up for yourself? The first thing was get clear with your priorities, understand your value, and don't give that away freely, so that you deplete yourself. Give it away judiciously so that those are reciprocal relationships. And then number two was commit to your passions, and that was returning to you. And for me, that has meant, wow, I built this whole new career and a whole new industry. I'm feeling pretty good about me right now. And the other thing that I reflected on, Linda, you're going to laugh about this, but it's, I went back to Mina, and we did a show probably a year and a half ago. I think it was April of 2021, and I'm just dating the podcast now, but now it's the end of October 2022. So it's been almost a year and a half, but I went to Mina, Arkansas in the spring, and this time I went there last week in the fall, and it's this western part of Arkansas that is beautiful, and the leaves have turned now, and it's up in the hills in the Ouachita Mountains, and I was talking to your listeners and going on and on about how Mina was so progressive, and money had been put into it, and it had been gentrified, and it was it surprised me to find so much progressive culture in such a small town in the boonies of Arkansas. And so just to show you how my, you know, what, how I experienced Mina this time was, that was in April of last year. But I, since then, and I failed to mention, and I want to come back to Mina, that's why I'm saying commit to your passions. I failed to mention, and I'm going to say it now, that one of the problems Mina had through its history is it was what in the South is known as a sunset town. And you know what a sunset town is? You remember?
Not it, really.
From our from our history lessons, from being in the South and forgetting this, because I had lived in California for the last 30 years, but coming back to the South and its history of racism, and separateness, and, you know, segregation. That
yes.
In some ways, some things have changed, and in some ways, they haven't changed much at all. And I didn't notice when I was in Mina last time that there were no people of color there. But when I went back this time, I thought, huh, knowing that this was a sunset town. A sunset town was in the South was all Negroes, which is the term that was applied back, you know, Civil War and early 1900s, that Negroes were not allowed in certain southern towns after dark.
That's right.
And we're told you need to find another place to stay, or you need to find yourself gone by the time it gets dark. So these were called sunset towns, and Mina was one of those. And I want to tell you that I reflected last year when I was there that they had been friendly to Texans and bikers and Amish. And then when I went back this time, just a week or so ago, I also met and saw that they were friendly to gays. And I kept looking around going, but where are the people of color? And a couple of weeks ago, this is part of a long story. I'm gonna wrap it up here in a minute. But a couple of weeks ago, I did go to a fundraiser for Chris Jones, who is the Democratic candidate for governor of Arkansas. And he's running. He's a black man. He's a nuclear physicist and has an amazing resume. He's just a wonderful person. But he's running against Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And I don't know if you know the whole national story about her journey on the Republican ticket, but is that basically that she was the, you know, the White House press secretary in the Trump administration, and there people in Arkansas are very divided about what she represents in terms of an old guard that is closed and privileged and not understanding of the need for progression or including all the people. Now, this is one perception. And then on the Democratic side of the ticket, Chris Jones is seen as progressive, inclusive, cares about all people, but people in the Sarah Huckabee Sanders camp would look at his platform and say, well, he only cares about the people of color. He's not talking about us. So you come back and you see both sides, because, you know, I moved back to Arkansas and I see that there's still kind of this, even though people talk in code and they don't come right out and say the words, there's a very high level sophistication in the sparring that goes on between the old guard, the old white dominated society, and the younger and more diverse and more color and more types of people fighting for ground in the same stronghold in the South of, you know, so you see it played out real time. And I know that this shows up in the national media as well. If you watch it or listening to it, you can see that there are numerous states in the South where the lines are getting drawn harder and harder, almost like a civil war. And we talk about this, about how there are people on both sides that are very dogmatic and very entrenched in their ways and ways of thinking. And so as I've been walking around in all the camps and understanding both sides and being the person I am and trying to be open and listening and understanding where the friction is coming from, I show up in MENA again a year and a half later.
Okay.
And all I can think of is Chris. Two weeks ago, I went to his fundraiser, and Chris Jones said, "Now, I want y'all to know, I went to MENA." And he's been going on these 1 mile walks and asking people in the community who are like minded on his party and his ticket for governor in Arkansas. He's been asking them to go on this 1 mile walk with them. And so, no matter where he's shown up in all these small towns across Arkansas, he's been saying, "Walk a mile with me. Walk alongside me. Don't walk in my shoes. You can't. I can't walk in your shoes. I can't. But walk with me." And he's been in this beautiful, in my opinion, 1 mile walk. And when he went, one of the towns he went to that he was talking about during this fundraiser was MENA. He went to the Sunset Town. He's a black man going back to this town that has been historically white, that is starting to open up and is progressive, but and yet there may be black people there. I just haven't seen any. And there may be Hispanic people there, but I just hadn't seen any. And there may be Indians and Native Americans there, but I just didn't see any. I think the demographics are just not very diverse there. But he made a point to go to for a walk in MENA to say, "We are all in this together, and we are one family." And his whole ticket has been about unity. So
okay.
I'm sitting in this living room listening to the candidate for Arkansas governor talk, and this has been one of my passions. We're talking about our list still, getting clear with your priorities, committing to your passions, and one of my passions just sort of presented itself. I mean, it's not that I want to get involved in politics again, but it's – and I have been – involved in politics in the past, in my 20s when I lived in Arkansas before, but just being a part of this discussion as we are upon Election Day, which is November 8th, but most people around here have been doing early voting, but it just sort of reopened my eyes to the fact that I am back in a state in the South where a lot of change could happen, and there will be a lot of confrontation, and there will be an opportunity for me, I guess, within my seat of where I work in a state agency to, again, be up close and personal. And I'm still trying to decide how much I want to do personally while we change administration. And that doesn't mean we're going to, you know, we have a Republican governor currently, and who knows who's going to win the race, whether Sarah, who is the Republican, or Chris, who is the Democrat, are who's going to get elected. It's very exciting to see either way, because the state of Arkansas is being forced to change and being forced to reckon with itself, regardless of what is happening in our national politics and how much we are consumed with what's going on the national level and the way things are playing out through social media and people living in their bubbles and, you know, hate speech and all the things that we're seeing. So I'm telling you a really long story to say in this topic of how do you show up for yourself. Get clear with your priorities first. Number two, commit to your passions. And as I'm describing, one of my passions is exploring and being with people and understanding the heart and the pulse of what's happening in a place you live in and deciding where you fit in it. And that's really where I am right now in my journey. Number three on the list, after committing to your passions and understanding where you are and how you fit in this new life you've chosen or the life you're living, number three, acknowledge and honor your feelings. Okay, so this does not mean you avoid confrontation. Linda, we talked about this so many times, is that and I was re-listening to our podcast from last time, that, and you made the point about how when you lean into the difficult relationships or the different difficult changes in life, even when it hurts, you have to go through it. And you made the analogy that it's a jab from a spear, and the jab leaves a wound, but it's there because you need to clean up that wound. You do you remember saying this?
Yes.
Okay, yes. That was you talking about taking the jabs from the spear, cleaning up the wound, taking whatever fear, whatever lesson that is, and using it to grow from, and feeling those feelings. And so number three is acknowledge and honor your feelings. Number four is take action, even if that action feels like not really setting goals, but just staying focused on you. And so one of the ways you can do this is to share with others who are like-minded, people who are also trying to grow and be spiritually aware, and staying in that, the Christians call it fellowship, but, you know, people who are out in the world in a broader sense spiritually, not necessarily staying in a community with one set religion. There are many people that are part of a larger sort of metaphysical spirituality out in the world that isn't tied to any one religion or philosophy, but it's this idea of leaning into those relationships so that you can learn from them, and by just being present. We've talked about what it means to just be, or just to spend time with people. Taking action, like we're talking about in relationships, sometimes means just being present and leaning in and showing up for that person. So
yeah.
showing up for you and showing up for that person, because that means that you're, like, when people need you, they invite you in. And we've spent so much of our time talking about, like, not pushing someone or not putting your own ideas onto someone, but waiting to be invited and waiting, you know, for them to say when they need you or how you can help them. And a big part of that is listening. And a big part of that is just physically being present. One of the hardest ways to be, just be with someone, or to show up for someone you love is to not, like, if someone's in pain, you can never really understand their pain, but it's important to be present with them in their pain. And I made some notes on this the other day. I wonder if I still have this handy. Let me see if I can find it. I'm getting distracted because I wanted to share. I'm wandering in my thoughts, but I'm trying to get back to make a point. Okay, talking about sitting with other people in pain. So I just wanted to look back at my notes and share just a couple of thoughts that occurred to me when I was working through that part of taking action. One way you can take action is to just be with your friends, to not try to fix them or resist the urge to try to help them, but just to be with them. And so here's a way to think about sitting with someone in their pain. The first thought I had was that you are learning that you can see someone's pain, sort of communicate to them that you can see their pain, but you, even though you cannot know it. So in other words, they're hurting and you somehow can convey to them that you see it, though you cannot fully know their pain. You can also convey in a way, and I'm not saying you have to say these things, but you need to convey through your actions that, here's another thought, that I do not, this is me talking, I don't feel qualified to help you in your pain, but just know that I'm here. I see your pain, though I cannot know it. I do not feel qualified to help, but I am here. Here's another one. I care that you are suffering. You can trust me and our friendship. There's nothing wrong with us. And the final thought I had on that was, just tell me when and where, and I will be there for you. So let me just read those all again. It's almost like a poem, but let me read them again. Okay. To emphasize this idea of sitting with someone in their pain but not trying to fix them. I see your pain, though I cannot know it. I do not feel qualified to help, but I am here. I care that you are suffering. You can trust me in our friendship. There's nothing wrong with us. Just tell me when and where, and I will be there for you. Okay, so I'm going to stop that. So that was part of that section of taking action. So far, how do you show up for yourself? I'm revisiting the list. One, get clear with your priorities, understand your value. Two, commit to your passions, return to yourself and the questions and ideas and concepts and intellectual and spiritual challenges that are you. Number three, acknowledge and honor your feelings, even if that means it's going to be painful and going through them and confronting hard things. Number four, take action in your relationships and in your own life, even if that means you just need to sit and listen and resist trying to help, and also sitting with others through their pain. Number five, and this is one of my favorites, keep negative thoughts in check. Okay,
yes.
Another way that you, a thing you need to do to show up for yourself is to, and I've noticed this in myself and in my friends and in my clients, and I've learned some of these techniques through my own counseling. Like I've gone through a lot of personal therapy using cognitive behavior therapy, CBT, which is when you change the way you think. So if you think something, you believe something, and you act on those beliefs. That's cognitive behavior therapy in a real short nutshell. So the whole idea of keeping your negative thoughts in check is that you have to learn some physical, neurological almost, techniques, these ways of thinking, to stop or change the way you're thinking in that moment, so that you can change your beliefs tied to those thoughts and your actions or behaviors tied to those beliefs. Bam. So here, what are some techniques to keep negative thoughts in check? One is, and this comes from the 12-step movement. The 12-step is, you know, recovering from an addiction, whether that's alcoholism or drugs or any substance abuse. But the 12 steps talk about stinking thinking. And stinking thinking is just what it sounds like. It's just completely negative. It's unproductive. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you know you're doing it, but you can't stop yourself, and you're doing it over and over and over again. But in the 12-step program, I went through one years ago through the church that was called Celebrate Recovery. It's based on the 12 steps of an AA, like an Alcoholics Anonymous or something, but it's through the church system. And so Celebrate Recovery, they teach you the 12 steps, and the stinking thinking is stop, stop, stop. And even if you can't do it for yourself, you may be able to, a close friend or a counselor or a lover or whatever may be able to tell you, stop, you're doing that again. You're doing that stinking thinking, stop, 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 stop. And
right.
They can see it, but a lot of times you can't. And so a trusted lover, friend, family member will say, just tell me when I'm doing it. My professor friend, you've heard me talk about Professor Marianne Pearson. In the past, we used to ride our bikes, and we would share a lot of things and talk. She used to talk about her technique was a red stop sign. So the way that she stops the stinking thinking is just visualizes a red stop sign. So she puts a sign in her head, and it's a big old STOP, and so that helps her. So for me, the term stinking thinking or a stop sign for Marianne, Professor Pearson, or other people have their versions of this. I'm sure that if your listeners have stuck with us this long through this long talk, that they have ways of stopping thinking, and that's just one of many techniques that you can do with cognitive behavior therapy. Okay.
Well, if I may chime in, since you mentioned it,
yes,
before
please.
We move further, because, you know, this has been so exciting, and, you know, I got cramps over here the way we cover stuff. But when you speak of that stinking thinking, I like that. And when it comes to the stinking thinking, Professor Bond, it's about revolutionizing your mind, or shall I say transforming your mind. Just as you said, it's through the behavior therapy, the red stop sign. So what works for me is through meditation or whatever, when I'm angered or when I've just had it. You know, I go into my mode. I go into my prayer, okay? I go into my prayer. And eventually you are upset, you're angry, but you must switch over and think about the good things about this person or this issue. You have to think, you know, come out of that stinking thinking. If your prayers are strong enough and your momentum, your energy that you're putting out there, it's going to make that switch. So when that switch comes in and you think about the good stuff, okay, well, they did this, or from this issue this happened, or from that issue it happens, it begins to throw you into an appreciative mode. You have to appreciate yourself for experiencing it. You have to appreciate them for showing it to you, because either way, through that appreciation, you've gained a gift. You've gained something. Now, that gift could either be a can of rotten worms, or it could be a golden covered jewel box. Either way, you have received the gift. So that brings you back into that transformation, that mind change, and you work through it. And you begin to say, again, why do I say each one, teach one, and we learn together? So I just had to put my method there, because revolutionizing the mind, as you said, it's all in the mind to change that, the red stop sign, the idea of stinking thinking, and the other version. So I had to put my version in there, because it's all through change, and it's all through action.
Yes.
Action.
That's
so
right.
Thank you for letting me interrupt that. Yes.
No, it's never an interruption, Linda. It is always a clarifying, and we have mind meld and we have a sync, because, again, you just brought me back to where I wanted to take this, and we have about, I don't know, 10 or 12 minutes maybe to wrap it up. But, Journey, we're on. I said keep negative thoughts in check, and you said continue while you're doing that, appreciate those mirrors, those people that are – through this exchange of relationships and feelings, these hard things, you're learning and receiving gifts. And it's part of the transformation. You are living through it, and you are revolutionizing the mind. And also, back to your original point from last time's session, you're revolutionizing the mind because when you change you, it changes, or something to that effect.
Yes.
And so by changing your mind, you're changing your circumstances, your relationships, your path, everything. And it's this continuous evolution of life, and not just life, your life. And so appreciate your mirrors, because that is part of the growth and the beauty of being human. And so that's a perfect segue for what I want to wrap up with, which is I have used my pain over the past 30 days or so since we last talked. It has been so hard. It's been so hard for me not to get to enjoy my boyfriend up close while he's separating and doing his own work. But through this process and this exchange and us holding up our mirrors at this point in our lives, I've been so blessed. And let me tell you about some of the gifts. Even though it's been hard for me to be alone, it's been hard for me to miss him, and it's unsatisfying for me not to see him all the time. But I've had to learn, because of this forced separation, that in order for us to move forward, I have to trust him. I have to let him do things his way. He is getting healthier. I have to wait. But in that process of waiting and being separate from him, I have learned to be happy for him, because he's going through this significant change and almost like a metamorphosis, his own revolution, revolutionizing his mind. And I'm proud of him, and I have to work to try not to help, but just to show up for him when he needs me. And because he is revolutionizing his mind, he's getting better at asking me for that help, and I'm getting better at waiting until he asks for it. So I'm realizing here's another gift. I'm realizing that it took huge courage for him to make the change that he needs to make without having me there for him all the time. So
wow.
He's doing a lot of the work on his own. He's doing a lot of the work on his own. I have to wait while he grows. I have to feel sad and rejected and missing him. But at the same time, I also know he's sad and rejected and missing me. But this is necessary. And you know what it forced me to do is see him as the man for taking the lead in our relationship. And then he, once he confessed the big problem he had and that he was willing to work on it and go through the revolutionizing of the mind, however long it took, that all he's asking for me is to sit tight and follow his lead. Now,
wow.
I don't know if that means, and we talked about this in your last session, that whether relationships are for a season, a reason, or for life or for a lifetime. But I don't know if this relationship was just for a season and this is as far as we go. I don't know if it's something we had to do in order to be able to have a relationship for a lifetime. But in the meantime, the net of it is that he has told me he still needs me, and I have seen him from afar, listening to him on the phone, not seeing him in person, but I've seen him mending his relationship, both with his stepmom and his brother, who classically overcommits and overcares for others, but is possibly missing the chance in his life right now to share precious moments left on earth with his aging mother, the brother's aging mother, and also seeing my boyfriend, if I may call him that. I don't know if he's still my boyfriend. Anyway, my friend, my significant other, who he's been mending his relationships with his stepmom, his brother, by helping him see how he could change his course, and then helping his mother, his own elderly mother, because she really has no one in her life, and he is her main source support, and she is his, but because they have to live together because he's on disability. But he and his mother are learning to set better boundaries and communicate better through this change that they're going through. So it's been a joy for me to watch him in his reconciliation and getting out of his own rut and taking action in his life to be fully present and facing his fears and mending the relationships. I mean, I'm seeing him. He had to tell me, you're not helping me, you're hurting me, and told me to back off. And then do that work himself. And I've had to learn that even though it still hurts me and I don't get to enjoy time with him, I do get to enjoy this metamorphosis of him where I see him healing and putting himself first and putting
Bye.
His important relationships, those long-term family and friend relationships, the ones that are who make him who he is, let him put all that first instead of me because I had needs and I need to do the same. And I need to keep doing the same with my friends and families and loved ones, even when it hurts. So that's where we are. And I just we're not together, but we're not together,
that's
but we're not apart either. We're still talking.
That's
we're still talking.
You're together speaking, as we say, and as we always talk about Professor Bird, through the ethers, because, you know, if I may say, when we asked about relationships, you know, is it for a reason or a season? Well, relationships come about for growth, change, and for us to learn how to show up for ourselves and others. And I have to reflect back to, you know, like being there for persons and letting them know that they're there and hearing their pain and stating that you're not qualified because, you know, each situation is a different situation and you really have to know where that person is before you can really, like, step in. We can't fix anything. We can fix ourselves. And we can't walk in their shoes, but the idea of letting them know that we're there for them. Now, it is my nature that if I see something incorrect toward anybody, then I'm going to step up to the plate. That's my nature. That's part of me. But you learn. And through the years of being that, I'm never going to stop being that. I will always speak for those who are voiceless, if I will say, or who do not have the courage to speak up or to ask for themselves. I will always do that. I was blessed with getting that, and that's just the way it is. But I'm learning how to still do it, but in a way how to unify both parties, okay? It's always a them and a they. It takes two people.
Right.
But as you go through it.
Because you can't speak for them because that's disabling.
No.
So you have to show them how to speak so they can do it for themselves. And that is exactly right.
Only are you showing it for themselves, it's growth for you because you really have to sit back and say, how am I going to do this? How will I do this as I stand in the middle of this and not offend or just make it as pleasant as I possibly can? That's hard to do when you're outspoken with a big mouth like me because I'm in your face and get you told. But sometimes that does not remedy it. What remedies it is that you find a method to go in, to still state what you have to state, to still get it over, but you do it in a different way. So when you say the growth and understanding, if I'm fighting for someone, I'm fighting for you, I will ask you a few questions. How do you feel about that? Or what do you want to do about that? And from what I hear, I might tell them a story. I never say you should because that's not for me to say. But if I hear one inkling that you are not willing to fight for yourself, or you are willing to roll over like Rollover James, okay, because there's no Rollover James in my life, but that's just me. But once I pay attention to that, then I put my sword down because my sword is for me, and I use it for you also. But I'm not going to fight for anyone who doesn't want to fight for themselves. See, that's where you're trying to fix it, okay? And we're not here to fix it. But while you're going through that, you're still learning and growing and understanding the need of this individual or why they have to have that or why they would allow themselves to be in that type of situation. See, it's growth no matter how we look at it. We just have to learn how to get it across. And that's the joyful end. Like you say, you see his growth, his family, what he's doing. You see that. Oh, when this ends up, when this comes to a completion, it's going to be a joyful thing because everybody is going to make that change and everybody is going to be happy in all situations. And you can sit back and look at it and say, wow, I started this. It helped me. It helped them. What a wonderful
thing. I do know I was a lever in their family change and their family dynamic. I did step in the middle of it and challenge some things overtly and made sure that they heard each other where they had maybe gotten stuck in some patterns. But then I had to step back out. It's not my job to fix it, and it may mean that the change of this person, the man that I love and that I admire, may mean that he stays in that family system and may never come to my side of the street. Why would he? Because what he's doing is actually making it even better for him to stay there, and improving his relationships makes that even more home to him. Even though he was forced into there because of a disability. So I invested love and patience, and I fought for him, but I also thought there would be, at the end of it, there'd be a love relationship for me and my partner. Mm-hmm. He'd become in part of my world, and, you know, and that hasn't happened that way. It's happened where I joined their constellation, their universe for a while. And then, in fact, my own therapist said, Karen, you need to decide if you're going to be a asteroid kind of just flying through their orbit and moving on, or are you going to settle into their orbit as a satellite and continue to rotate in their orbit? And I'm in my own therapy with that counselor, you know, professional therapist, because I need to understand that about myself, too. I thought I was entering into a love relationship, but I was really entering into a broken family system where I had some kind of job to do, apparently. I was called into this from the universe to do that job and then to step out. And I don't mean to say that I'm all-powerful, but I was a catalyst. just like he's a catalyst, he's been a catalyst in my life, helping me make this transition back to Arkansas for the chapter three, as I've said. We were important to one another for a reason. And
it's always
and that we both served as catalysts in one another's change and one another's transitions. In fact, he called last week, and it was delightful for me to hear him on the phone saying, even using the word, he said, I think I'm going through a metamorphosis. And I laughed, and I said, well, you always have kind of been a butterfly, you know.
Okay.
So we've been having, you know, we've been laughing about it because we're very conscious that we're both going through these beautiful changes in our lives, and it makes me happy, but it also potentially makes me sad that we won't be in one another's lives in an intimate way going forward, because ultimately, as I mentioned, I'm looking for my ultimate traveling companion. I'm looking for a partner for life.
Right.
And I just to share my life and ultimately make a home together. You see what I'm saying? And you can't do that if somebody's staying where they are. So I don't know what the future brings.
This setup is, like you said, you're always placed there for a reason. There's always a reason. So in different situations, I say, why am I here? I know I'm placed here. What am I to do here? And that stuff begins to unravel. So is it for them or is it for me? Okay? So as you're going through these changes, you know, I always use the word, we're all change agents, but we have to become change makers. And that starts with us, and that change starts within us. It starts with us, and it really ends with us. And you don't know what the outcome is going to be, Professor Von Attel. You actually go through it, but those questions are there. But why we're going through it, we're steady growing. We're steady realizing. We're steady reflecting. We're getting those aha moments. Things start coming to you, and you speak of the universe, and you speak of the satellite. You know, I love the planetary information. I'm learning more about it, you know. Like with the retrogrades and the solstices and things. And at this particular time, things are moving. I'm not skilled, but I read about it in Scorpio. Scorpio is that planet that goes deep underground, and it brings up everything. It brings it all up. And you have to understand what's happening as you're moving through it. We're all connected out here. Like, I like her analogy, the satellite or the asteroid, which one you're going to be. I like that because we're out here in this universe, and those stars and planets are just not out there blinking. And the more you research about it, or you can't listen to the general stuff. You have to go deep. You know, people are into astrology. Oh, Pisces is this and Leos are this. That's general stuff. It's a lot to go to that. But if you get in tune with it, and as you mentioned, that asteroid or that satellite, well, you're going to stay there and overlook, or you're going to burst on through and keep on going. I really like her. I would like to meet her when I come.
It's a guy.
Arkansas.
It's a guy.
Oh,
it's
a
guy.
Okay, well,
you talking about my therapist?
Yes.
You talking about my therapist? No, it's a man.
Yes.
And he's very blunt and very to
good.
The point. And you never know when you never know when you get a new therapist what you're going to get. But he's also good with words and listening.
Yes.
And that has helped me so much because I'm a word person. And so he's a mirror for me right now. Hearing me, because I'm very talkative and articulate, and then he feeds back in his own articulating way. So I've been very gratified that he's helping me slowly. We're not trying to reach any conclusions or draw any inferences or make any decisions about anything in my life. Just, you know, I guess just having somebody listen and reflect back to me while I'm going through this hurt of separation from somebody I've been forced to step back from. That these are important moments of self-reflection and self-growth for me. So I'm just going to wrap up the list, and in case anybody was listening and we were just talking too much and they want to hear it again, but it's, and I'll put this on the blog as well and share the link. Share the recording with me, as you always do. But how do you show up for yourself? One, get clear with your priorities. Two, commit to your passions. 3, acknowledge and honor your feelings. 4, take action. 5, keep negative thoughts in check. 6, appreciate your mirrors. 7, let others learn to speak for themselves, but be present. I need to expand that idea in the future. And then number 8, practice. No, I'm going to say number 8 is what you said, learn during the changes and stay deeply, consciously aware of what is happening while you're going through it. And then I would say finally, practice the self-care. We didn't really talk a lot about self-care today because we talked about it a lot of other times, but that's maintaining those daily practices like the artist dates, the journaling, the meditation, the hiking, or whatever that is for you, for my boyfriend or ex-boyfriend or friend or what soulmate or whatever he is now. That was fishing. So the final thing is practicing that self-care and being in touch with your soul and your God and your greater self or whatever that is for your power in the universe, so that that self-care is the thing that balances everything, that you are constantly pouring back into yourself. And even though we got this big old list, don't forget to nurture yourself. It's not all intellectual. It's physical, it's spiritual, it's time, it's just being, it's being present for yourself, and it's also feeling the feelings and acknowledging them. So that's it. You did it again, girl.
You did it again. I just love it. I just love it when we come up, because
we did,
I know it's going to be great. And
you sparked it. You sparked it, Linda. You said when you change, it changes.
Oh, yeah.
Said at the last podcast, and so that sat with me. And then a month later, I'm back to tell you that hit me deeply, and also what he was doing by telling me he needed time and space after I had basically called the question and he came clean, was that, you know, we, as much as we love people, sometimes the only way to be with someone you love is to step back and to allow them to grow while you allow yourself time to grow. Now, if you come back together, that means you're still in a relationship of some kind. You still love each other. You know, like, I've had to change the dynamics of my family with my mother over the years. I've had to change the dynamics of my relationship with my sister over the years. My older brother, and I'm not that close to my younger brother. We just never have really been able to connect and spend that kind of time. But I haven't lived in the same state since we were little kids, in other words. You know, it's just hard. But anyway, so as I've been changing and defining and reestablishing those relationships, that's what he's been doing too. And sometimes these are the most important times that we can do this. And whether some people are lucky enough to, I think, because I think we're meant to be together in pairs, I think people are lucky enough to go through those changes and growth and share that intimately in their lives with one another. They're married, they've been living together, and you've talked, Linda, about your own family where sometimes it's like, I don't know if they're sisters or your sister or brother, or you said it was like they start to look like each other because they've been together so long and they're so in sync. Some people are lucky enough to have that connection and be able to do this growth together with that. And others are they're able to do this, that on their own or in a close, intimate relationship with friends or family members. And ultimately, I think it's, you know, like we've talked about before, the onus is on you as the individual to do the work, be conscious about it, and stay close in those relationships and do what is not only best for you, but what is best for the relationship, no matter how hard that is. And that's just where we are, sharing and caring.
It's hard. It is hard, but it's always such a pleasure. Always such a pleasure. And, you know, it's always looking for that joyful end, that joyful joy and happiness, and next time, you know, where we do segments on what is happiness. See, my happy might not be the same as your happy, but the most important thing is that, and I'm going to close with that, when you say self-care, and my last statement to blend with yours is that it all starts with you, and it all ends with you. There's process in between, but it starts, it begins with you, and it ends with you. And I'll just throw an example, like we go through a day, we go through the day, but at the end of the day, who are you with? You're with you. And you might have been with 100, 200, 300 people during the course of that day, but at the end of the day, it's about you. So if you're into that self-care, you might assess or journal or write. I like to journal every day, and I call it my assessment. So tomorrow I won't do the same stupid thing I did today. Okay, what did I do stupid today that I'm not going to do tomorrow? I have to read back. I bullet point and say, you can't do that no more. Okay, it's like conversation over here, because that's my portion of self-care. And then when something is hitting me, I know that it's all about the mindset. See, it's our minds that block us. So I have to do whatever I have, transform that stinky thinking, as you say. Now, that's the word I'm going to grasp. I'm going to take your word, stinky thinking, okay? So that's
stinky thinking, but that's not me. That's AA. That's old.
Okay,
yeah, that's been around for years. Stinky thinking.
Through Professor Bird, okay? AA through Professor Bird, stinking thinking.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of stinking thinking, a lot of stinking everything going on around here. And I would like to say about when you made the statement of, what was it? It's the, how did you put it? I don't look at it as that. I didn't recognize. Oh, Sunset Town. Okay, Sunset Town is there, and it's true, and being out the South. But what Sunset Time taught an individual, a person growing up in the South, when you understand it, you can recognize it immediately, no matter where you go. It could be at 12 noon, but you can recognize if you're in a Sunset Town or not. And by having that observation and that awareness, you know what time it is. And it's up to you how you want to deal with it. So those Sunset Times are good, you know, and you're absolutely correct. And to this day, and as a child, I would always be home at dusk, always. And as an adult, I'm not one for moving out there too much where I can't see. Because that's what it was structured for. When the sun comes down, you come home because you want to see everything and everybody moving around you. It does what it does. So I wanted to put that out there. When you said Sunset Town, I said I want to hear her version of it or what she recognized. Yes, there's many sunsets.
Well, that's you just taking that to a whole other level, the way you said it, Linda, and I don't know how much more time we have left, but basically, the Sunset Town was to protect people of color because the bad things that would happen to them in that town. I didn't say that fully, but there was lynching going on, and there were routing people out of their homes and burning their homes, or people getting raped or beaten or horrible atrocities to one another because of racism and the difference in our color of our skin. And so I didn't explain that fully, but you just took it to a whole nother level, is that learn to recognize danger and learn to understand whether you are welcome or not. And see, you said no matter what time it is, it's not that it's sunset or that things happen after dark, although they do. It's more about know where you are not wanted and don't put yourself in danger. Now, that's about them. That's their brokenness, and they're kind of screwed up if they put that on you as a human being. But why put yourself in proximity to somebody who's crazy and who's going to hurt you because of the color of your skin or whatever the perceived difference? So I'm saying racism in the South underscores the real problem with humanity, which is that there are people out there who want to hurt you just because you're different. And the lesson we need to learn is that protect yourself, but also And the thing that my boyfriend or my soulmate or whatever we want to call him, the thing that he's involved in is point it out and let people see when they're being evil and dark be willing to and be willing to fight back. Be willing to fight back. I mean, I've said before his name is Jimmy, and I'm just going to say it in the podcast. And if he ever listens to this podcast, he knows this is about him. But he's willing to fight to show people their stinking thinking. And then he had friends. He's had his friends attack him because they're saying, you're angry. You're showing hate. And he's saying, you don't understand. When people are evil and they are producing hate, the only way is to stop them and, you know, help them see their behavior and that they need to stop. So you, he's like matched their anger with your anger so they'll hear you. And I'm saying I would really like to know how we courageously stop other people. And I'm saying, look back at Chris Jones. And I think he did the right thing. Running for governor, he went to MENA, a known and historically significant sunset town, and got black and white and Hispanic and Asian and gay and straight and religious and non-religious people to walk, and current politicians and past politicians. He got people of all stripes to walk with him for a mile in the roads of MENA at sunset to make a point. And so, and then Jimmy, my friend, is doing the own thing, the same thing in his own way, is saying, people, we need to stop this. You need to stop. So we put these stop signs in our own brain, those of us who are conscientious and are saying you need to, that stinking thing you need to stop, be self-reflective, change yourself. But that also we're hoping that through this example of growing and changing, we will see other people get, and you know, the liberals have a term for it, it's called getting woke. We hope that other human beings will get woke and see that you cannot continue to treat one another this way. And you know, Martin Luther King was famous and brilliant about showing the nonviolence movement and bringing that to life in the 50s and 60s and showing America again that we need to stop the fighting and the hate. But how do you do it? You know, we've never in America, in this great democracy.
What is great about it, and that's why it is imperative that it all boils down to educating each other, because each culture is different.
If we can open our ears
to those who want to hear it. So because you have those deaf and blind ones, I'm going to take it back to your title again. You have to show up. You have to speak out, stand up, and point it out. And coming as an individual born in the South that was taught, we're breeded a certain kind of way. We're a little bit different. When you see that awareness, you don't fall in and try to fit in. It's no such thing as fitting in. You blend in. And if their mindset is not like your mindset, you become aware of what you're dealing with. And from there, you speak on it or point it out in the manner that works best for you. But you have to do it. I'll give you an example. I'll just share this with you. I was with a specialist at a time. And there was a new counselor came in, and that counselor was just talking down, okay? Just talking down. The counselor was talking down as if, I really couldn't wrap around it, but I know it was something I wasn't used to, so I said, okay, well, let me point it out. So I said, sir, the manner that you're speaking with me, that tone is unacceptable, okay? And I suggest you find another way to deliver it. That's what I told him. Okay, well, you know, when you point out people to people that think that because they have a title or they're in a position, they put you in a box because they really haven't taken out the time to understand you, and they just come with you at the normal. Well, I recognize. So let me stop this now. And the gentleman just kept on with his attitude and his statements and stuff. And you know what I had to end up telling him? I said, sir, where were you born? I said, that's okay. You don't have to tell me. That's okay. I already know. And he says, well, why do you want to know? Why did you want to know that? I say, because usually the area where you're born will demonstrate your actions toward other people. I said, so you don't have to tell me. I said, I'm out the South, and I know a Klansman when I see one. And he could not say anything to me, okay? He could not say anything to me. I meant what I said. I've already asked him in a nice way to change his approach, okay? Because I recognize where you're coming from, but it's not going to work here, okay? You need to understand where you are. And I had to tell him, it was so outdone with him, and we talked about it, and I told his administrator, I cannot be, no, I can't work with him. I will not work with him. Otherwise, you're going to have a problem because I'm not going to back down, and I'm going to always point it out, and I will always stand up. So I already know
yeah.
it's going to create a yeah. situation, so let's change it now because I know what I'm dealing with here. That's the difference now in the States, not only in the South. People are more ugly and rude in California than they are there. The only difference is they try to shield it. They go to picnics, and I say plastic knives and forks, because in the South, we all know if we do or if we don't, or we will we be around or if we won't. But one thing about that, they practice one thing, and that's respect. And when you have respect, that gives you an opportunity to respect yourself, respect others no matter what, and what you don't want to be around, you get away from it, okay? Because you know that it's a do or die till the end, okay? That's the only difference there. It's like you said a statement, reflect, you know, readjust, resummarize. I always use that and reflect that. And those things that are taught to us at an early age now, Nina, I have no desire to go to, okay? And even I can see things in California, even with the candidates and the persons that are out here campaigning. I look at who they have around them. I look at the groups that they're surrounding themselves with as they're speaking on what they're going to do and what they're not going to do and cutting up the other opponent. I look at that, and that tells me everything I need to know about that candidate. Okay, right off the bat, no matter what you're trying to project out there, no matter what you're saying, I already got you. And that's through growing up in those sunset towns. So I'm so glad that you brought that up, but I don't have a desire to go to MENA, and I don't care if they walk a block with me. It's like I already know what MENA's about.
I understand, but at the same time, because I'm white, I can walk in MENA
yeah.
and blend in
yeah.
and quietly make sure that there are good people there, and that if they are not treating people correctly, that I have the opportunity to tell them how to do it. And so we have to choose our our battles, and we have to find the way to point out when another approach would be more acceptable. And then also, yes. like you said, walk away when somebody has a closed mind or is toxic or wants to maintain their we always talk about growth mindset. The opposite of a growth mindset is people on the planet who have a fixed mindset. And it's just like two different tribes on the globe, is that there are people who will be oriented towards growth and change and progress, and there'll be people who want to keep things just the way they are and hurt other people if they try to change them. And unfortunately, that's the world we live in. And I don't know that it's ever been more different than that. I just know that we know more about it because of social media and the way that the media and information is shared and moves so quickly now in the world. We're way more aware of it than we used to be. I don't know that it has changed. We, you know, people keep saying, oh, we live in such terrible times. Has it ever been this terrible? It probably has been this terrible. It's probably even worse, but it just feels worse because we're so aware of it, and we have so many examples we can see every day, and because people are inundated with these short messages and trying to absorb them all, and it's just like data, 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 data being thrown at you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. and so you get saturated with it. You get sick with it. And so that's another thing. You know, we're talking about our list of showing up for yourself. One way you can practice self-care, as that last part of the list I was describing earlier, is to say the stinking thinking and put a stop sign in your head, but you can also turn off or turn down the hurtful information that is coming your way or that you feel assaulted by. Does that make sense?
Well, that's right. You turn it off, you don't allow, you reject it. And that is the only way that you're going to continue to show up. And in order to reach your goals, you have to be able to show up. In order to show up and deal with that, you have to reject it, okay? You can't get caught up in it. And that's why it's so meaningful for me to mentorship is very important. Mentorship, you must have excellent mentors, and we need to mentor our youth, because the stories that we know, they don't know anything about. So it's
right.
very
That's
confusing
right.
for them. They just think that it is, I've done things, did presentations and things of that nature coming out the South, and when you're in your classrooms and the professor is talking about the black and white water fountains, I raised my hand and said, I live that, and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it's like,
and tell the story, and tell your own story, and tell your own story.
You have to tell your
because
own
that
story.
Is your own story. Mm-hmm. That is what people need to hear, and I'll add to that. I agree that's 100% correct, and we're going long again because it's an important conversation. I was sitting in it's a wine bar. It's my favorite little local place where I go to have conversations with the locals and just hang out. And anyway, it was interesting because this last week I ran into a young black man that I had run into at another place. We discovered I worked for the state. He worked for the state, but I'm in education and he's in, I think he's in the health department. And then his date that night was another young lady, a black lady who's in the Department of Human Services. And so the three of us, all working for a public agency, we struck up this conversation, and I had met Todd before, but I had not met Diane. And so we're sitting having this great conversation, and I was, we were comparing notes about my travels in Arkansas and some of the things that I had learned, and I told him about how in the town that he had grown up in, which is Forest City, Arkansas, that the state education agency was doing a lot of work with the local schools, and he was talking about how public education was when he was coming up in Forest City and then how he got out. And you were just talking about mentoring. So here's a perfect example.
Yes.
Todd, this 40-something black man who grew up in Forest City but was able to get out and better his life and conditions. And he said not necessarily because of his own family circumstances or because of his ability to be a good student. He said, he was heavily influenced at the time. His family was poor and messed up, and his discipline as a student was messed up. And he said, but he hung around with these older guys, and he said they
yes.
went off to Arkansas State University in Jonesboro, and they all were having success in life, and they were kind of buttoned down. They had come from supportive, also black families where their family had established a sort of breaking the generational pattern of poverty. They had gone on to have good jobs, good professions, and some of them had gone to college and that sort of thing. And so he said, I chose to follow my homies to college, not because of my own family, but because I wanted to be with them. They set the example for me. And in that moment, while I'm talking to him about the work that the state's public education agency is trying to do in Forest City and help lift those kids up and help address the issues of poverty, he said, you know what? I should go back and tell my story and
yes.
work as a mentor for high school students in
yes.
Forest City
yes.
because they could
yes.
see a way out if I showed
yes.
them how I did it and
yes.
the importance of other peers and other influences. And so so we're just bringing that full around that story where you were saying, you know, you can be that voice to help tell your story and help change somebody else's path or make a moment
of
Yeah.
I'm going to cut you off because we're running out here, but I do want to end this with saying, first of all, thank you. Thank you for this, Professor Bird. And we're going to, I hope I gave you something to make the next topic with. But mentorship is very important. We do have to tell our stories, and I will share with you. You will be coming into Los Angeles because I'm setting up something for mentors. I'm putting a call out there, and we need their help because our youth needs us. And I want you know, I'll be keeping in touch. You know, we've taken it to other states and stuff, but we're bringing it to Los Angeles, and I would love for you to be a part and one of our mentors. You can't fly in here but every 6 months, but it's getting ready to move out. So I'm asking the listeners to listen because we need mentors because our youth needs us. We want those storytellers. We want persons from all walks of life that can uplift, that can reach out, that can empower because our youth are suffering with all of this confusion out here and this deceptiveness. We as adults are suffering. So I can imagine how they're feeling. So on that note, I'm going to close out with this song and say thank you, thank you, thank you, and we will be talking. Listeners, Karen Bird, life coach, KarenBird.com is how you can contact her. Have a great, great, great evening, Professor Bird. Thank you.
Thanks, Linda.
Showing others how to live. We care, share, we love.